This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS, celebrating 30 years as the leader in the rare coin grading industry. Visit www.pcgs.com to learn more. Don Kagan has a PhD in numismatics and has been involved in the rare coin industry his entire life as the scion of a notable coin family. Since 1933, the Kagan name has been attached to everything coin-related, from the sale of major rarities to new discoveries in the field of private minted gold of the American Gold Rush era. In this Coin Week podcast, we sit down with Don to have a direct and introspective conversation about the auction business and why he's decided to return to it. So, Don, you grew up in the auction business, and I hear in March that you're going to be returning to it.
Yes, I grew up in the auction business. I did my first auction catalog in 1968 while I was working on my BA degree in numismatics from Northwestern and working for my father and uncle. It was fun.
A lot has changed in the auction business since Kagan's took a break from it.
Oh, yes. So my father started in the auction business in 1940 doing auctions. Because he was in a small venue in Des Moines, Iowa, and wanted to branch out and get people from all over the country or even all over the world, like King Farouk's advisor and et cetera, to sell coins to. So he went into the mail bid auction business only. And then when I joined him full time in 72, I suggested maybe he should go into the public auction. And we did that in 1973.
And Kagan's had a number of high-profile sales in the 1970s.
Oh, we did. We did. And we've handled some great rarities during that period of time from colonials and paper money as well as federal coinage. So that's how I learned a lot, and even world coins. So we would get, because we're a public auction company then we started doing, getting a lot of consignments. And we even did, like I said, foreign paper money, et cetera. So, and then we went, I remember suggesting to my father and uncle that we go from what they called hot press to cold press, which is using word processing to do auction catalogs instead of the old linotype. So I saw that transition too. And of course, as a little kid, I worked stuffing envelopes and for my father, with auction catalogs and that part of the business. But I really learned numismatics through actually writing auction catalogs. And then in 1977 was we bid on and we got honored with our first A&A auction catalog. And I was young and I wanted to do something different, and we kind of shook the business up a little bit, the auction business up, working with Amos Press, Coin World, and I came up with the idea of five separate catalogs, one for each auction session, color-coded. So like it was green for paper money and red for foreign and gold for pioneer gold and gold. So that was fun. And then in 1983, I came up with the idea of hiring a professional artist, and we hired Peter Max, and I got him in a transition stage, and I said, you know, I'd like you to do the cover of my catalog, and, you know, you can do anything you want. Lady Liberty is kind of more iconic for numismatics than anything else, so why don't you do Lady Liberty? And then, of course, he did that. We made lithographs that we sold to help pay for his fee, and we did posters as well as the auction catalog. And as interesting enough, in 12 years ago, my father died, and Peter traded me for some auction catalogs that I had left over, which he would sign and sell on cruise ships or whatever, for an acrylic, beautiful acrylic painting of my father that I'm now going to have in the Art Kagan reading room at the ANA library in Colorado Springs. So, but we like to do some innovative things. That's what I love besides selling cool coins. So we've been in the auction business. We did three ANA auctions before 1988. when it was just it just got very, very competitive, building the infrastructure to create online bidding was very expensive at the time. So it, now you can actually have professional companies like iCollector actually do all that technology online streaming of your auction catalog, and you can put a lot more information. So everything can be photographed and imaged and go online. And we're doing some new things, like we're partnering with a number of different organizations and companies to do things like if you read the auction catalog, the auction lot, and then you'll be able to link to more information with a partnership with the grading companies, perhaps, to do that. And we'll partnering with, of course, ANA. We're the official ANA auctioneer now. So we're working with them. We're going to give away free memberships to everybody who buys in the auction if they don't already have one. And for larger consigners and larger buyers, we'll even give away a lifetime membership in ANA.
Let me take the conversation back a ways. The coin industry has become much more corporate in the past 20 or 30 years than when you had a family coin business with your dad and uncle. What was it like being around at the dinner table at crunch time when you had a family-run coin auction business?
I remember not so much the dinner table, but actually working on the dinner table to 1 o'clock in the morning, matching up coins to consigners in 1977 with my sister. So yes, it was family oriented. We did everything back then, and most of it was by hand. So that was daunting. I would never go back in the auction business, especially at the ripe old age of 66, to do that type of hands-on, all that manual work now. Now, of course, things are actually it's much easier. But you're right that it's become much more corporate and larger and bigger, and that's one of the reasons I think we got back into it now, is that I want to make it more personal. We're not dealing with widgets. We're dealing with our babies, our passion. We spent, as a collector, you spend decades sometimes putting together a catalog, a collection of material. It needs to be highlighted. It needs to be appreciated. And I think when you have three or four of the same type of collection in a mega thousand lot, thousands of lot auctions, that it loses some of that special personal relationship and discussion, and I think that story needs to be told. So for some of our consigners, we're telling their story, not just the story of the coins, but the story of why they got involved in collecting those coins, maybe a story or two, a personal story, something that was interesting that happened, that all of us collectors can relate to.
I'm going to rattle off a number of historic sales, and I want you to let me know if you attended them. The Bass sale.
Sure.
Pogues, I already know you were there. I saw you.
Sure.
Eliasburg.
Yes, I was there for...
Pittman.
Yes, of course I was there.
We don't really see that trend anymore, at least not in numismatics. In art and cars, yes. Do you see a way of changing that trend and bringing back the excitement of real people in the flesh bidding on our hobby's most memorable coins?
Coins now, you can bid on them in Hong Kong, you know? I mean, you don't have to be there. You did have professional auction representation. You've had that. And I would highly recommend that to most amateurs and even collectors to have the advice of a professional, say from the PNG or you know, somebody who's been around for a long time who does that sort of thing. But there's just no substitute for being there. Now, I understand if it's pedestrian type of material, you know, Barbara has seated, you know, quarters and type coins or Barbara or new that, but items that you can find pretty much at most coin shows. And those are great items. It's just, you know, they're not necessarily special unless it's a nice collection. But, you know, you go to a Pogue sale and you're seeing things you haven't seen, some people have never seen at all. And there's an excitement. And I still feel the excitement at a sale like that, excuse me, or Newman sale. And there's been a spate of them in the last, you know, half dozen years. Some great sales. And there's just nothing like being there and the electricity in the room. You still have it. But you also have people bidding online, and that's great too. Or by phone, which we've had before, of course. But there's advantages to both. And I think there's a way of presenting an auction that creates an atmosphere for electricity and interest by being there. But if you can't be there, you can still participate.
So what do you view as the new Kagan's Auctions personality? What do you see for it as a brand? And how do you intend to build that personality or brand into the upcoming auction in March?
Well, I think it's the personal touch, and we want to tell the story, your story, and why you put this collection together. All of the coins are going to be unreserved in this auction. And I think that's something that people appreciate. And so that if you spend a lot of time on it, you have an opportunity to get something and get it at a good price. And of course, the really good coins will be competitive. I don't want to put your collection in with two or three others like it. So we're limiting the amount of auction lots. We'll have one session, maybe two sessions, depending on the material that we get in. We won't try to be everything for everybody, okay? You know, certainly U.S. federal coins and paper money, colonials, we're known for all of that. And that's probably where our concentration is going to be. But if we get a great foreign coin section or ancient coins or we already have people lined up that are experts, and we're going to go outside our business to hire the best and scholars to catalog that specialty. So there's different people who have specialties, as we all do, and we're going to use that because, again, we want the most information and the best presenters and scholars to be cataloging. So that's different, and limiting the amount of auction lots and telling the story, that's what we want to be known for, plus the innovation. We were known because of everything from the Peter Max catalog back then and the 77 catalog to Saddle Ridge Hoard that got 1.65 million websites to carry that story, using Amazon, building a platform as Amazon as our partner to sell the Saddle Ridge Hoard. You know, we even had the Billy the Kid, the second Billy the Kid authenticated photograph ever, and we used the way that we personal touched and our ability to find the expert to authenticate that piece. So we're building upon those relationships, and again, we've been in business for well over 80 years, and so we have a lot of relationships with people. So we're leveraging that to build this brand of personal touch, major marketing, and innovation. So as you know, this is right outside the door, right? You know, 28 years since our last auction. We're charging nothing to consigners. Our consigners get full hammer for $50,000 consignments and up, and $2,500 auction. We're working on just the buyer's charge. And then we're still giving away so many educational pieces, the reference works, memberships in coin clubs from A&A to the Colonial Coin Club to the society, Paper Money Collectors Societies. We're giving away those because we want to expand the American Numismatic Association mission of education.
One of the things, when I was at your booth, I saw some highlights from your upcoming sale, including some Beckler Gold and the Chapman U.S. Mint restrikes. And maybe this is something your father said, I think, and I know I'm paraphrasing it here because it's been a few years since I've read a passage about it in your book, was that for most dealers on the floor, there was a time when they knew the price of coins, but not the value of them. And that when coins like these deviated from the path of what would be considered normal material, the knowledge base of the professional dealers and collectors dried up. I think he said this about the Clifford collection. Do you think that this is one of the reasons why this type of material found its way into your auction? Because Pioneer and Territorial material have been synonymous with the Kagan brand for years.
Yes, of course. Well, as you know, I part of my matriculation as a doctorate in numismatics, and this was my dissertation, was the reference book on Pioneer Gold. I found nothing more interesting and fascinating than our story of our nation's, you know, some of our entrepreneurs and pioneers who melted down the gold dust from our nation's three gold rushes and made coins. So that's a wonderful story, and I was happy to spend years putting together this reference book on Pioneer Gold. And of course, in the course of that, I had to photograph and find the collectors. And of course, my father and uncle were already in the business, and that was one of his favorite areas. So it became mine too. Colonial coins is another area which I found fascinating, done some research on, as well as paper currency. So those are three of the areas that Kagans have already been known for, because that's kind of where my passion is. And my associate David McCarthy is passionate about those areas also. But in the last 20, 30 years since we've done auctions, people haven't really known us for doing the federal coins. Well, we've handled 98% or more of the coins in the Red Book. I mean, it isn't that we haven't handled those, but we're not branded for knowing those areas. And yet we do handle quite a bit of that, and so does our clients, and building collections. So Dr. Allen, who I've been working with probably for 30 years building this Pioneer Gold collection. I mean, this is about relationships. That's what this business is, if you want to be in it long term. And we've built a relationship where I would put together the collection. So we're not minting any more of them. So how else am I going to get those coins available to sell to my next generation of collectors? So we have to have these relationships, and that's what we really want to be known for, is taking care of our clients and maximizing both getting them value when they buy and maximization of their material when they sell. But it's also not just about the money. It's the story. It's the passion. It's why we do this.
Do you happen to know what your dad's favorite coin was?
Yes, definitely. At the Garrett sale, when he bid on and was successful on the proof $50 gold piece. It's now in a PCGS 65 holder, proof 65 holder. That was his favorite coin. He even had the chutzpah to make these pins, lapel pins with $50 gold images on it. He would tell me that he already had that planned out before he even bought the coin. But he knew he was going to buy it. He was prepared to pay $1 million. He paid $500,000. Said, "I saved $500,000." But that was definitely his favorite Pioneer coin. And
so, literally, when you see it, it's an old friend at this point.
It is. It is. It's on the cover of my book.
And what is your favorite coin?
Well, that's certainly one of them. You know, the Brasher doubloon, the unique Brasher doubloon, which I've owned and sold twice. Is one of my favorite, the first gold coin in America. But I said those are my two favorite anyway, yeah.
Where can someone go to sign up for the auction, order a catalog, or look over the lots that'll be offered in March?
Very simple. We're giving the copies of the catalog free to anyone who requests it. Remember, it's also online, two different places, Kagan Live and iCollector. But if you want one, all you have to do is go to Kagan's, www.kagans.com, or contact my auction director, Nina, N-I-N-A, at Kagans.com.
And you think this will be something people might want to attend in person?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's an event. It's an event. It's like watching a basketball game in your home or at the game. I mean, there's a difference. Or the World Series.
Okay, Don, thanks for sitting with me today. Good luck with the auction. We look forward to being there.
Great. Thanks. Look forward to seeing you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. And remember, you can download all 40-plus episodes of the Coin Week podcast for free from the iTunes Store. For Coin Week, I'm editor Charles Morgan. Until next time, happy collecting.